are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, February 4th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, City Council Speaker of New York City, Corey Johnson. On Amazon, NYCHA, and his potential run for mayor. Also on the program, Americans want us to soak the rich. Meanwhile, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam contemplates resigning after a difficult weekend.
He did the moonwalk badly.
Virginia Lieutenant Governor puts out a statement denying claims of his assaulting a woman. Donald Trump doesn't do much besides watch TV, according to his schedule.
Sounds good to me.
Executive time.
Executive time. 10 EU nations recognize Guaido in Venezuela. And U.S. claims it can't return all the kidnapped kids to their parents. Meanwhile, sleep safe, however, 4,000 troops head to the southern border. The Odd Couple, folks. Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders seek to limit stock buybacks.
Thank you, Bill Ozonic.
SCOTUS stops the Roe v. Wade destroying trap law temporarily. Social Security expansion hearings being organized presently, and the whistleblower who revealed that Jared Kushner did not deserve security clearances put on suspension. All this and more on today's Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you had a good weekend. Saw some folks out there today over the weekend at Michael Brooks's show that happened on Friday night. Sparsely attended, but it was good. And no, it was just nice. It was nice to be in that room because last time I was in there, it was so crowded. And this time, it was just nice. You felt like you could move around. It was just like plenty of room and this and that. So that was really great. It was well done. Smart of you to do it that way.
Yeah, no, I wanted a lot to of keep it. Complained. I was like, I don't want to sell more than 15 tickets.
Right. A lot of people complained during the Majority Report show. Like, oh, it's so crowded. It's so packed. Yeah. Are we close to the fire limit?
Right.
You were just like, I'm not having any of that. This
no,
is going
to
be
I
completely
want everybody to be
exclusive.
Spacious.
So that was really enjoyable. A good time was had by all. And, of course, we had some Majority Report fans in studio on Friday. That was also very exciting. And then over the weekend, I got introduced to a professor of marketing who develops like how what sugary foods you eat make you buy stuff or something like that. And that was exciting on Twitter.
Yep. This is a very frustrated marketing professor. It was. I'll talk about it more on TMBS, but I thank you, everybody who came out. That was a great show. And from Australia to Florida to Denver to Indiana, it was amazing. And we had a great time. And when we put it up, because we taped the whole thing, we'll put it up first for TMBS patrons. Obviously, there was a very funny interaction with Sam.
There we go. Well, that's I've seen people have cut.
Are cutting different
cut
clips of it,
which you can, bootleg versions.
Yes,
of that.
You can find those if you have the ingenuity to find those. That's my approach to all bootlegs. If you have the ability to find it, go find it.
We support all sort of piracy,
folks. Protect your loved ones with the peace of mind of life insurance. I've mentioned this before when I didn't even contemplate life insurance until I, shortly after I was married, my then wife was pregnant. with our first child, and I had to start thinking about getting life insurance. Many of you think you can't afford it. Maybe you think it's too complicated. Well, chances are SelectQuote can help you get it for less than a dollar a day. SelectQuote comparison shops up to 10 highly rated companies, including Prudential, Banner Life, Mutual of Omaha, others, to find you company with the best rates. SelectQuote could find a 35-year-old man a $500,000 policy for under $19 a month. That's less than a dollar a day. Cup of coffee a day costs more than that. SelectQuote's breakthrough technology allows them to quickly match you with the best insurance company to find your best policy. Plus, quotes are free. Look, again, if you have children in particular, life insurance is crucial. God forbid something happens to you. And look, and here's the other key. Get it while you're young. It's cheaper. It's significantly cheaper. I am not a financial advisor. I can tell you what I did, term life insurance. The whole life insurance thing, I was told, like, you know, you do better off just doing a term life. So it's theoretically possible. Now, I know a lot of people feel this way about, you know, other types of insurance too, social insurance. But theoretically possible, you'll pay for 20 years, 30 years. I did 30 years on my first kid, 20 on the second, because I still had that first policy. And you won't die. And then nobody gets a payoff. But that's the whole point of insurance. This is to cover you in the worst case scenario. Let SelectQuote save you time and money. Get your free quote at SelectQuote.com/majority today. That's SelectQuote.com/majority for your free quote. Don't put off protecting your family another day. SelectQuote.com/majority. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states. Folks, you know what's not smart? Job boards that send you candidates that aren't qualified for the role you posted. That's not smart. And the ones that send you a mile-high stack of resumes to sort through? Not good. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's the place to hire the right person for you. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans through thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills. Then it actively invites them to apply for your job so you get qualified candidates first. And fast. That's why ZipRecruiter rated number one by employers in the U.S. Brendan, how did you find us? I know you went on ZipRecruiter. Were you actually on ZipRecruiter, or were you on somewhere else and it pulled you in?
I think I was on ZipRecruiter. Eventually.
Really? Yeah, you were on ZipRecruiter. Yeah. All right. Well, either way, I was quite happy with it. I mean.
Yeah, real talk. Brendan is definitely, I would say, the nicest and most well-adjusted person here, and I include myself in that ranking.
Oh, by far, not even close. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's how we got Brendan, folks. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. I was super, super impressed with it. ZipRecruiter, it is the smartest way to hire. All right, let's take a look at this.
Will you do news packets, Brendan?
Listen, over the weekend, I'm not sure if you're aware, the greatest dynasty in professional sports, one which will seal that greatness by not going to visit Donald Trump, despite the fact that there may be some personal relationships, but it doesn't matter. What's important is their political actions and their public actions. And despite a couple of missteps, what's also important is you have good advisors. So maybe you are not so savvy about what's going on in the world, and maybe you buy a wrong hat and put it in your locker. Mistakes can be made. The important thing is that you listen to your smarter advisors, in this case, Tom Brady's wife, Giselle, basically said, sure. Don't do this. Don't be an idiot. And he said, yes, dear. Okay. And he was smart.
I'm going to kiss my kid on the lips.
Well, that's fine, too. That's fine, too. That's fine.
I love Tom, but
But that's said like a guy who's not a parent. That's all I can tell you.
Yep.
That's meanwhile,
like a guy that will not kiss
parent,
his child on the lips.
Greatest quarterback in the history of the game. Maybe one of the most accomplished athletes in any sport at any time. I'm sorry. I know that bums a lot of people out, but it's true. Meanwhile, the Super Bowl took place this weekend. And here's Donald Trump talking about how he's really upset about black people.
Talking about the kneeling position you've taken and the controversy around it, do you think that the players who did kneel had a point? I mean, are you sensitive at all to players like Colin Kaepernick who point out that the majority of victims of police violence are black?
Well, you know, I'm the one that had passed judicial reform. And if you look at what I did, criminal judicial reform and what I've done, President Obama tried, they all tried, everybody wanted to do it, and I got it done. And I've been, you know, really a lot of people in the NFL have been calling and thanking me for it.
Really?
They have been calling and thanking. You know that people have been trying to get that taken care of, and it's now signed into law and affects tremendous numbers of people and very good people. I think that when you want to protest, I think that's great, but I don't think you do it at the sake of our flag, at the sake of our national anthem. Absolutely.
But you are, do I understand you saying there, though, that you still are sensitive, though? I mean, you understand the motivation for the protest, though you don't like the form of it.
A lot of it is having to do with reform, from what I understand, whether it's criminal justice or whatever it may be. And they have different versions, and everybody seemed to have a different version of it. But a lot of it had to do with that, and I took care of that. I think that people have to, at all times, respect our flag and at all times respect our national anthem and our country. And I think there are plenty of places and times you can protest, and you can do a lot, but you can't do that.
That's bad.
I took care of it.
So the bill that passed, the criminal justice reform bill, affects maybe several thousand of the 180 or 90,000 who are in federal custody in a federal prison. That has nothing to do. Well, maybe it's like a fourth order thing to do with what Colin Kaepernick was protesting. What Colin Kaepernick was protesting was the complete disregard for black lives, particularly in the context of the way that black people are policed in this country. And to the extent that the Trump administration did anything on that front, it was to have his attorney general at the time, Jeff Sessions, tell every police force in the country, not only are we going to pull back on any oversight that we're providing problematic police departments currently, we're not going to engage in that in the future. So in other words, if you have discriminatory practices, if you have a problem on your force with overt or covert racism or de facto racism or whatever it is, if you have a record of being particularly violent with black people, don't worry about it. We're not coming from you. You go to town. You do you, is what Jeff Sessions told them. So the idea that in any way Donald Trump addressed this is a farce. That's the first point. Maybe he's deluded about that. Maybe he's not. I don't think he cares one way or another. And then the idea that the standing up during the singing of the national anthem at a football game is the sine qua non. That's the one thing that you can't not do.
You can do a lot.
You could do a lot, apparently, according to Donald Trump. But that's the one thing you can't do, particularly if you're a black guy, right? I mean, because we all know that was his attempt to run in the midterm elections. Let's make it cultural. I think they're going to shift and go back to abortion, but we'll see. All right. Look, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to City Council of New York Speaker Cory Johnson. Right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program New York City Council Speaker Cory Johnson. Speaker, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I should also say you are, if I'm not mistaken, the acting public advocate as well. Is that right?
That's right. I'm a public advocate until we have the special election here in New York City later this month on February 26th. And I assumed the role on January 1st. And I'm happy to hand it over to whoever wins later this month.
I would imagine that's you've got plenty on your plate. Well, let's start with this. Now, we've played a couple of clips of you over the past. Well, we played one on Friday, but we played over the past couple of weeks. Specifically, you in conversations, or I should say maybe in hearings, frankly, with executives at Amazon. Let's just start with this. Tell us what the Amazon deal is as it is now, and then we can talk about why you find that problematic in some ways.
Well, you guys have covered it, but with great fanfare, in November, the governor, Governor Cuomo, and the mayor de Blasio, made a joint celebratory announcement saying that Amazon was coming to New York City, to Long Island City in Queens on the waterfront on the East River. And what they outlined in that announcement and what we have learned since is that Amazon is coming here, but Amazon's not coming here just on their own like other big companies have. They're coming here and they're getting $3 billion in a combination of tax incentives and direct cash subsidies. They're getting public land. They are avoiding our city charter, our city constitution's mandated land use process, where there would be a hearing where they would have to go through and negotiate and answer questions. And they did this all in a Hunger Games-like contest, pitting over 200 cities and counties against one another. And what we've learned at these hearings is that Amazon actually got some what you could consider better offers from other cities and states and counties across the country with more money and probably more crony capitalism and corporate welfare. But they came here, they said, mostly because of our workforce, our talent pool. And so it's my sense that we gave away the store. We gave away too much. We're giving away almost $3 billion and public land and not having a public process and scrutiny for a company that's worth nearly $1 trillion to the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos. And the rotten cherry on top of all of this is he was able to secretly negotiate a helipad on top of his new HQ2 headquarters that they'll be able to land right on top of it instead of using our subway system that is crumbling. And the ultimate question is this an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars? Is there a better way to spend $3 billion, whether it be on our subway system or on our public schools or on preventing homelessness or public housing, which is crumbling in New York City right now? And my sense is yes. And I think that we got played. I think the taxpayers got played. And I think Amazon is exhibiting a form of vulture monopolistic capitalism. And the two hearings that we've had, they have been unable to adequately answer our questions using stale talking points over and over again. So we had one hearing in December. We had another hearing this past Wednesday. We're having another hearing next month. And then we're going to have a public hearing for the public to testify as well, because this deal deserves scrutiny that it hasn't received since Amazon got New York City government employees to sign non-disclosure agreements where they avoided any sense of scrutiny throughout the entire process until the deal was announced.
Wow. All right. So I didn't realize about these NDAs, and I want to get to the status of the deal exactly. I mean, but before we do, what makes the relationship between Amazon and the city different than, because I have folks who have said to me, well, look, these subsidies are available to any company that comes in. It's just usually not one maybe this size or with this baggage. Is that the case? Could I have a small business or any size business and go to that area in Queens and say, like, oh, and I'm going to get these tax benefits for if I start a company there?
Well, it is true that a bunch of these subsidies, there are two subsidies. One is called REAP and the others called ICAP. They're state subsidies that were created that the city participates in. And these are considered as-of-right subsidies. They're subsidies that you can achieve if you locate your business in certain geographic areas in New York City. The issue here, though, is that the only reason why they're able to get these subsidies in many ways is because they're locating in a place in Queens, and they're taking city and state land. So, you know, we're handing over public land to them so they can actually be in a geographic area where they could qualify for these subsidies. But some of the cash that they're getting is not part of this. They're getting almost $500 million in direct cash from New York State to be able to actually construct their building. And that is not as part of these subsidies programs. This was that was sort of a one-time deal that was structured for them on top of the subsidy programs they're getting. And I think the larger conversation that needs to be had here, both in New York City, New York State, across the country, is, are these subsidy programs worthwhile? Do they have a good return to the taxpayer? And should these type of subsidy programs be allowed? And I think that's a much bigger conversation that this Amazon deal has really highlighted.
So even if you start with the premise that these subsidy plans are a net positive, which, again, I share your skepticism about this. I've seen ads on television for years where, Governor Cuomo's bragging, like, come to New York State. Our corporations pay zero in taxes. Wow, that's great if you're one of those corporations. But so in this instance, were they sold or they were given a state land? I mean, that to me, I would think that land is pretty valuable stuff in Queens.
It gets even worse. I mean, the land that they are going to be occupying is city land. The city is now, I believe, going to lease to the state to be able to transact this deal and execute it in the way that it was structured. But adjacent to the land that they're building on were two sites. One was a city-owned site just to the north of it, an adjacent parcel that had been identified to go through our rezoning process to achieve affordable housing and other necessary public benefits, whether it be open space or school seats for the community in Long Island City. And just to the south of the site, adjacent to it to the south, was a privately owned site that had been going slated to go both these sites through the public approval process where the city council would be able to vote on it and negotiate what was best. These sites were going to achieve somewhere along the line of 5,000 units of housing. Almost 1,500 of those units were going to be affordable housing. And what was done, and what I think is really suspect and strange, is that both of those sites, which really have nothing to do with Amazon, they're just adjacent to the sites, both of those sites that were slated to go through public review were folded into the Amazon site. So these two sites that for years were identified, had gone through a community planning process, were about to enter our public land use review process in New York City. At the very last moment when the Amazon deal was announced, it was said now these sites are folded into what's called a general project plan, which avoids the land use process in New York City. So you have a private site on the south where now the owner of that site doesn't have to go through the public review. You have a public site on the north, which was slated to go through the public review, which got folded into it. And so, again, it's a very strange thing here where it's not even just about the Amazon site. It's about the sites surrounding it, which had been identified for and were slated to go through some level of public review to get a park, to get affordable housing, to get school seats. Now the community and the city council and members of municipal government are cut out of that process, and it gets folded in with Amazon, where we can't even calculate how much money they're going to save avoiding that type of public review. And the housing that was slated for the site is no longer slated for the site in some of those sites.
I mean, so this is, I mean, this is almost, I mean, it's a microcosm of what people find problematic with a company like Amazon. You know, it's almost like a metaphor, right? I mean, because we have these set of rules that are supposed to create processes that are supposed to be make these the use of this land as democratic as possible, so that there's as many stakeholders involved in these conversations. And the richest company in the world, or pretty close anyways, one of the richest men in the world, come in and the whole thing is waived to provide them with their headquarters. So is this a done deal? I mean, is there absolutely, is it just basically two guys, the mayor and the governor, get together, sit down with Bezos and say, we made a deal and that's it? There's no, is there any way theoretically to stop or to change this deal?
Well, at this point, we have tried to use our bully pulpit as the municipal legislature here in New York City to try to shine some light on a deal where there was no light, where there was no public review, no public process in a meaningful way. It was cloaked in secrecy and in darkness, negotiated with non-disclosure agreements, even though billions of dollars in public money was being put on the line. The question of whether or not this is a done deal, Amazon's tone changed a bit at the hearing we had last week. They started to hint, well, if you don't want us, we want to come to a place where people actually want us, which I don't really buy. I think that's sort of a scare tactic to try to raise doubt in the minds of, are we going to lose potentially tens of thousands of jobs? We don't want to lose jobs, but we also don't want to lower labor standards. Amazon has one of the most anti-union records in the United States and across the world. There have been strikes and protests across Europe. There's a distribution center on Staten Island where employees have been lodging complaints against unfair labor practices. And we wanted to be able to ask those difficult questions about their collaboration with ICE on facial recognition software and their track record in Seattle and how they were able to lobby and water down legislation and regulations that they didn't like as one of the biggest employers. There is an obscure board in New York State called the Public Authorities Control Board. And for New Yorkers who may have memory of about 15 years ago, when Mayor Bloomberg proposed to build an Olympic stadium for the Jets on the west side of Manhattan, that proposal was met with a lot of opposition and had to go through this obscure authority called the Public Authorities Control Board. That board is made up of three appointees, one by the governor, one by the Speaker of the State Assembly, and one by the majority leader of the State Senate. It requires a unanimous vote. If one vote votes no, then it kills the deal. The governor is contending that it does not need to go through that board. Other experts on this are contending that it does need to go through that board. And so there is some disagreement there. I believe it needs to go through that board, which means that there's significant leverage. And I think Amazon is feeling the heat given the tough questions that have been asked of them. And I think the public outcry related to this deal.
Okay. And so, I mean, it's, I remember the idea of a stadium that would have been a disaster. it's almost impossible to imagine that now, particularly with housing prices as they are in New York City, and congestion and whatnot. So, all right. So, let's just turn to a little bit in terms of like what else we could spend that money on. Today, it was announced that HUD was not taking over NYCHA, which is the New York City Housing Authority, but it was going to basically put it under some type of stewardship or monitoring, I guess. What can you tell us about that situation?
Well, I mean, NYCHA, the New York City Public Housing Authority, almost 400,000 New York City residents live in public housing, and it has seen years, if not decades, of disinvestment from the federal government, which has been hugely problematic. There was supposed to be a consent decree and settlement with a district court judge, Judge Pauly, here in New York City, New York State, and he didn't sign it because he he didn't think the settlement was good enough. But the real question is, how much money does public housing need? And the estimate of what public housing needs in New York City to be able to get it in a safe and habitable place without lead and without vermin and without broken elevators and without all the issues that plague NYCHA on a day-to-day basis is $32 billion. We need $32 billion to fix NYCHA. We need $60 billion to fix the subway and bus system in New York City. We're short billions of dollars in school aid in New York City, where if you are a student who lives in a low-income zip code, predominantly in neighborhoods that are communities of color, you're not getting an adequate education because you're not getting the resources, and New York City's owed billions of dollars from a suit from over a decade ago. So that adds up to be, you know, almost $100 billion. I think there's a better way to spend $3 billion in taxpayer money for children, for strap hangers, for public housing residents, rather than give it to a trillion-dollar company with a man who's worth almost $160 billion. We got played. We were played by Jeff Bezos. We were played by Amazon. They created the Hunger Games, pitted city after city against each other, and they're running away with our money, which they don't need. They have a terrible labor track record. They collaborate with ICE in a secretive way on a regular basis. They've watered down progressive legislation in the city of Seattle. If they wanted to come here without any level of subsidy, without using public land, and create jobs, fine, they can do that. But they're coming here and they're taking our money. They're taking our land. They're lowering our labor standards. There is a better way to do this, and it's incumbent upon us to expose their track record and to talk about how this is not the right deal for New York City.
What is the argument from those people who are pushing this deal, from the governor and the mayor and from others who are pushing this deal? What are the sort of the metrics of their argument? This $3 billion investment is going to lead to, I know they say 25,000 jobs. I will also say Foxconn said that that Wisconsin was going to get 13. right. I mean, I think it's gone from like 30 to 13 to maybe 1,000 at this point. But even presuming that there's 25,000 jobs that Amazon brings into the city, which is, you know, I would imagine 13,000 or 30 to Wisconsin, far more relevant in many respects than 25,000 to New York State and certainly New York City or vice versa. I mean, but even under those, like, what is the metrics here? What's supposed to happen now that we get Amazon broadly that's going to benefit the city?
Well, we want 25,000 jobs. You know, more jobs for an economy. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's provide a little bit of context. Since the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009, where the national economy and the New York City economy took a major hit, we have seen the longest economic expansion in New York City that's basically been recorded since the Great Depression almost a century ago. Over 700,000 private sector jobs have been created in the last 10 years. So when you take 25,000 jobs and you put it in that context, it's a nice number, but it's not a gigantic number. It's a gigantic number if you go to Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Scranton or somewhere in upstate New York, but it's not the same number here. That doesn't mean we don't want the jobs. It's just important to provide the context. The number that Amazon keeps citing, that New York City and New York State keep citing, is they're saying that there was a study done. Mind you, I had to say this at the hearing. The study was jointly paid for by New York City and New York State, which says that $3 billion will have a 9-to-1 return on the investment, and they believe that over the course of 20 years, it will create $27 billion in new revenue. But what they're not able to answer is, if those are the potential benefits, and I'm not sure I agree with those numbers or find those numbers to be accurate, but even if they are, what they don't account for are the costs. Those are the benefits. What are the costs? What does it mean in additional sanitation? What does it mean in additional school seats? What does it mean on the wear and tear on the subways and public transportation system? The study they're citing did not look at any cost associated with it. It only looked at potential benefits. deficits. And so they keep drumming on the numbers of $27 billion. We're going to get $27 billion and 25,000 jobs. Independent analysis disagree with that number. And again, if this was done in a public way, we could have had that conversation, talked to economists who could do this type of analysis, but that wasn't done. They're holding their hat on 25,000 good paying jobs, which we want, but not able to really defend the $3 billion in an independent way.
Right. So there's been a total failure of process. So best case scenario, we get a 9-to-1 return. But that is premised, that doesn't take into account any of the liabilities. Or I would imagine also it doesn't take into account the opportunity costs of that land and what else could be there in terms of New Yorkers, but also the direct cost to the city in terms of infrastructure. And I would imagine also to the loss of affordable housing that's going to be involved with this, right? And so this is really, in many respects, a process argument.
And it doesn't take into account what you mentioned earlier, Sam. It doesn't take into account what are the secondary displacement concerns, what are the housing cost concerns in the adjacent neighborhoods, what are the gentrification concerns, what are the mass transit concerns. It doesn't take into those kind of larger questions that you want to look at for surrounding neighborhoods and communities that have already seen a level of gentrification and displacement that is affecting those neighborhoods. And again, I mentioned it earlier, but it's really important to say I'm really proud that New York City is one of the highest unionized cities in the United States of America. And that's a really good thing because it creates good middle class jobs with pensions and good benefits for people to be able to support themselves and their families. It's a pathway to the middle class and for economic security. Amazon's track record is one that is hugely anti-labor. And when I asked them last Wednesday, would they agree to labor neutrality, just sitting on the sidelines and letting their workers organize if they wanted to, they said no. Almost a decade ago, there's a casino called Aqueduct in Eastern Queens that involved public land. And New York State was able to negotiate with an international casino operator, Genting. They were able to negotiate labor neutrality, where once the casino opened up and expanded, the operator would not get in the way of their workers unionizing. Amazon, at the hearing on Wednesday, when I said, would you agree to labor neutrality? The very short answer was, no, sir.
All right. So let me ask you this, and you tell me if I'm out of bounds here, because I know this is sort of like outside the portfolio of the city. But on this question, specifically the unions, but on other questions, too, there's another problem with Amazon, right? I mean, this is not like just a generic company coming in and looking for this deal. Amazon outside of New York, right, has incredible monopolistic power. Both in the marketplace and in terms of money, it has a tremendous influence on the politics of our country, both because it's such a massive company and has so much money. Also, they have, you know, Jeff Bezos, the owner, obviously owns The Washington Post. How much of that, I mean, I understand, like, look, your job is to deal with the facts for New York City, but how much of that is a concern to you? Because it's not just that they're not being neutral in the context of the unionization in their city. There is value to them to fight unions in New York, and the payoff is much larger than it is for a company who's just in New York, right? I mean, you have companies who don't want unions in their company. They're a New York company. They don't want a union in their company. So the way that they fight is going to be commensurate with what they think they're going to have to pay for unions in New York, in New York State. But for Amazon, the stakes are much, much larger to fight a union in New York than because it implicates their company, you know, internationally. And so what they'll bring to bear against a union in New York is much, much larger than a company whose stakes were just in New York. And that's also going to be true in terms of their influence on politics and on media. How much of that is it appropriate for you to consider being just a, you know, just your portfolio being about New York?
Well, I mean, when we look at the labor standards that have been created here in New York City, whether it's the city council a few years ago passing paid sick leave for New Yorkers, or all we do to ensure that we're a labor-friendly town, when you have one of the largest companies in the world, the highest valued company in the world, $1 trillion, and they have a really bad, extensive anti-labor track record, not just around the country and around the world, but documented here in New York City on Staten Island at a distribution center that opened up not that long ago, where there are complaints coming out every single month on how they treat their workers, forcing overtime, not allowing mandatory breaks, working in bad conditions. It's important. And I think there is an antitrust element to this, an antitrust element related to Amazon, but we've seen the conversation grow on antitrust related to Facebook, antitrust related to Google, antitrust related to these companies that a decade ago were celebrated as sort of the new economy. And we need to ensure that when you have these large companies, whether it be Airbnb or Uber or these large tech giants, we don't want them to erode labor standards that protect employees. So it's a conversation that has to be had. It's a conversation that hopefully now with the Democrats in charge of the House, we can have at the federal level through oversight hearings, through antitrust hearings, and it's a conversation we need to look at across the country. Income inequality is still the biggest issue in the United States of America, and the corporatization of our politics have showed that corporations and the CEOs and boards who run these organizations have far too much power, a disproportionate amount of power as it relates to the average citizen, and what are the effects of that? How does that affect everyone else? How does that affect how we spend government money? How does it affect public policy? And is it right for the future of our society? That's a much bigger question than just one side in Long Island City, but this is sort of emblematic of how they get to, as someone likes to say, rig the system, and how we need to be able to look out for the average New Yorker and the average American.
City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, just one last question. What's the story? Are you going to run for mayor? I've seen some, you've alluded to it on Twitter.
Well, I was not trying to play cute, but I hadn't done any fundraising. I've been in this position for a year, and everyone else who's definitely running had millions of dollars in the bank. So I wanted to be forthcoming about my fundraising strategy, which is even though I could accept contributions of $2,000, I've self-imposed a limit on myself of $250 per person. I'm not taking any money from real estate developers, no money from lobbyists, and no money from corporate PACs. And to be able to do that effectively, I need more than 7,000 New Yorkers to be able to contribute $250. And as I started to fundraise, I knew that if I started to do this privately, it would get out to the press. So I was being transparent about it. I haven't made a final decision. I love New York City. I'm 36 years old. I came here at 19 years old with two bags, knowing one person. It's a city of dreams and aspirations. And I'm going to keep looking at it, try to build support. And we'll see what happens. 2.5 years is, 40 lifetimes in politics.
Right.
But I'm grateful to be able to continue to do this work.
All right. Well, if people wanted to get more information, where should they head? Is there a site that
Corey for NYC, CoreyForNYC.com.
Speaker of the City Council of New York, Corey Johnson, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That's impressive, incidentally, in terms of the restrictions he's put on his fundraising. First off, you never hear of candidates who don't take real estate money in New York City. The only other candidate I'm aware of right now that is doing that is Nomiki Konst. And which reminds me, I should tell you right now, she needs your support. She's got 9 days, not even 9 days at this point, to, 7 days, to raise, another $9,000. My numbers may be off by 1,000 or so. $9,000 from New York City residents. You can go up to $250 And up to $250, those dollars are matched by the city 8-1. We have a very good publicly financed campaign system here. And that's why he said he can do up 7,000 some odd donations to that amount, because there's a limit on how much you can raise, or at least in terms of being matched. And it's 7,000 times 250. I can't do that math off the top of my head, but
of course not. We're opposed to math.
Significant amount of money. But if you have the opportunity, we're going to put a link to Nomi Const, and we will also put one to Corey Johnson's site. But if you have the opportunity to give anything to Nomi, she will qualify for the matching funds. And even if it's $5, $10, $20, that'll be times 8 if she qualifies. So it's coming down to the line right now. She got the signatures. Her signatures were okay. She's going to be making, she's going to get into the debate. So if you have the opportunity, like I say, $5, $10 times 8, that's significant cash when you're running in a special election in New York City. That election is going to happen in 3 weeks or something, I think it is. So so check that out.
Let's get her in that office, guys.
The interesting thing, too.
New York public advocate.
Yes, she would be great. Honestly, outside the system. And really, that job, the public advocate job, is a strange job. It's one of those jobs that, and I think this is true of some jobs in politics, but not to the extent that it is in this job. This job is highly undefined. It has often been a stepping stone for people. I don't think that she has. I don't know if she has the ambitions, but she certainly burned a lot of bridges, and she seems very comfortable with that, I should say. And that, I think, is a great top line for your resume for that job. She's also worked in the media, and her ideas about providing research that are going to allow for more journalism around the city is key. So I think she's an extraordinary candidate for that position. And I'm going to be watching the Corey Johnson.
I'm quite interested in a Corey Johnson bid. I'm pretty well convinced.
The just awareness of the dynamics here. And, you know, I think the stuff with Amazon is just not so straightforward as we were, you know, sold early on. There was a lot of skepticism early on, but I think he really clearly understands the dynamic here. And Amazon wants to be here. And if they want to be here that much, there is no reason to have to pay them money that should be going other places to come. This is going to make me laugh. I see what's being queued up here. I have not seen this before, and this is going to make me laugh because I already have someone. I have someone who already sort of says, "I wonder who made this."
Accuses you of having a crush on AOC.
Yes, yes. Folks, just a reminder: this program
is just so warm and thoughtful.
This program. Relies on your support by becoming a member. You make this show possible day in, day out. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you extra content every day. We give you commercial-free content every day. Although I'm not sure what's going to happen on Wednesday because I may have to have a personal day because... modern life, ladies and gentlemen. So your support keeps this show going. I want to thank our members, obviously, so much. We literally could not do it without you. And it is with all the sort of the mishigas that we get involved in the YouTube world, the nice thing about having a listener-supported show is that you don't have to tiptoe around certain things. And so that's good. We're not going to be getting big funding from any other organizations. That's just not going to happen. Members make it possible for us to feel good about that. So thank you. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Michael, TMBS, special time because of Tuesday. Oh, wait. Yeah, oh, and a reminder, tomorrow night, right. State of the Union address. We're going to be doing live coverage. Not sure what time it's going to start. We will tell you tomorrow. But so, it starts at 9? Is that right?
9 starts at
all
9.
All right, so we probably won't start until, you know, probably 8:30 or so.
So, yeah, the idiot is doing his address tomorrow night. So we're having a TMBS on Thursday evening before returning to our normal time of Tuesday next week. Breonna Joy Gray is joining us in studio on Thursday. We also have an activist, an Israeli activist who works on one state solution politics as well. And then on Tuesday of next week, Mark Blythe, who has been a regular guest for patrons, is going to be our main show guest. Check out the primer we just released for patrons with Nigerian British writer Ralph Leonard on CLR James and the critique of identity politics. Patreon.com/TMBS. Patreon.com/TMBS. Thanks to everybody who's at the live show.
Jamie?
Yeah. So this past weekend, we did something a little different on the Intifada, and we invited some of. Yes. Indeed. We invited some of our amazing Left is Best community members who are in town to come and make a participatory episode with us.
Nice.
How many
people?
We got a lot of good folks in here. We got Jeff from Georgia.
There was a seat. There was a sign on my. There was a note on my seat from Train Boy.
Yeah, we had Train Boy. he did some very on-brand train talk. We had Teacher Lauren, Theo, so many good folks. And
Teacher Lauren was here?
Yeah.
I met her husband at the show, and he is a carpenter. Gave me
oh, really?
Tip. He gave me a
you didn't
carpenter
Teacher
tip.
Lauren at the show?
Well, I did.
Okay.
But I
oh,
I'd
you were
into
excited to meet her husband because he's a carpenter.
He said,
what's the deal with Sam bothering me about carpentry?
You know, I got a big tip. Which I used in making a shelf this weekend, actually, which was a lot
Can
of glue.
Can we talk about AOC and carpentry together?
A lot of glue, yeah.
It's a good tip.
Yeah, don't hesitate on the glue.
AOC.
But yeah, it was super amazing, and I think it's going to come out pretty good. We also have our episode that is still up from last week where we talk about The Handmaid's Fail and The Purge movies with Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session, so check it out.
All right, and Matt?
Literary Hangover, still in the Seven Gables episode. Edgar Allan Poe coming soon, though.
Sweet. Mm.
All right,
This is a Bullprog, or I think
Bullprog,
goes by
Bullprog.
MS Tart, I think, too, on think SoundCloud.
So. Right. Bullprog's a heavy hitter.
We will head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number, and we will see you there.
I don't understand why all you guys are losing your crap over AOC.
You don't know why we like her?
Yeah.
What's not to like?
She lied a lot.
Give me an example of a lie.
She said that 200 million would be 40% of the population, and that's wrong.
Right, that's 60%.
I mean, that's closer.
Tell me what it is.
Let me do some quick math. It is 61%.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
I'm sorry. When I said it was 60%, I clearly lied to you. When we all know, after having done it on our calculators, it's 61%. Let's talk about AOC a little bit more.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my God. This pure descent of the divine goddess.
Oh, my God.
Right? Folks, please sit down, because it turns out that at one point in her past, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez danced.
Budgets are moral documents. We only have empty pockets when it comes to the morally right things to do. Healthcare is right.
Our climate is in a crisis right now. It is time to move over to a renewable energy economy. It will hire a ton of people. Wow. Every single American should have the opportunity to attend college or trade school. One of the biggest threats facing America is income inequality.
Exactly.
We see that this is not a pipe dream. Every other developed nation in the world does this.
I certainly hope she's not the future.
New party? Who dis?
Left is best. 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 Left is best.
It's really not about left versus right as it is top versus bottom.
Left is best.
And the only way that life is going to get better for us as working class Americans is by electing people who don't take corporate PAC money.
I love it.
Oh my gosh.